It's Saturday, December 23rd, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, our Week in Geek News segment, followed by a whole bunch of discussions about technology in the year. Good and bad technology, I should say.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.org. The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. So please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we're going to take calls during the second half, but first, we're going to talk about the technology in the year, the good and the bad. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can contact us right now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Geek Speak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks: John Tracy, technical support engineer at Surf Control; Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance; Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control; Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. We also have a few geeks supporting us in the background via AIM, or YIM, I should say. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Morning. Good morning.
We definitely have a full house. I'm Drew.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. Thank you.
Fantastic.
We are pushing our mic count in the air room today. Let's start with some news. First person to make eye contact with me.
Santa's
Drew,
website.
This
is earth-shattering, folks. Santa Claus reached out for a little help from stopbadware.org this week because his website, santaslink.net, had been hacked. So there's a guy in Incline Village. He's a monk. His name is legally Santa Claus. He has a big belly, red suspenders, white beard, etc. You can see him on santaslink.net. Somebody stuck some malicious code on his website, and he was spreading viruses. And he didn't know why Google had started to flag him as a bad website to visit. His hit count went down. He turned to stopbadware.org, and they came to the rescue. So you can now visit Santa Claus on his website once again.
SantaClausLink.net.
SantasLink.net.
Thank you, Drew. That's
very
apropos.
You know, it's just one of those things. It's kind of weird.
You know, something very special is happening tomorrow, the 24th of December. Something important to me, at least. John, you want to fill us in?
Radio turns 100 years old tomorrow. It's the anniversary for the first broadcast of radio. It was done 2006 on Christmas Eve.
You mean 1906?
1906.
What did I say? 2006?
2006, yeah.
What year is this?
2006.
Oh, okay. I'm 100 years behind then. In 1906, on Christmas Eve, was the first radio broadcast.
Well, the first public radio broadcast.
First public radio broadcast. That's true. In 1901, Fessenden and Marconi were working with radio transmission. But
yeah, whatever.
Tesla?
Yeah, Tesla was doing it back in the
Tesla
late 1900s.
You know, where is he today? He's dead, okay?
Right, Marconi's dumping, bouncing around, spry old man.
If Tesla was so great, why aren't we all at 220-volt electricity?
The question is, why, after 100 years of public radio, we're not so great, you know? I mean, come on.
Why do we have to plug things in?
I'm a huge fan of Tesla, and I really do not like what was done to Tesla way back then, when the whole power struggle, literally. Anyway. Reginald Fessenden gave a... first
public address. What did he say? What was the significance?
You know, I don't have the MP3. He didn't podcast it like we do. So.
So there's no copy.
Well, it was a test message. So it was just information.
Brown cow, or come here, Watson.
Something like that to see who could get the message. Because previous to that, it was always just person to person.
We got to find this out. Oh, hang on. I'll be right back with you guys.
He broadcasted it near Brant Rock, near Plymouth, Massachusetts. His intent was to broadcast across the Atlantic Ocean, but didn't quite make it.
And thank you, John, for that. Miles?
There's a judge in Texas. Actually, it's a U.S. district judge.
In Texas?
Who has, go ahead, yes, in Texas. Sorry. Who has put up an injunction saying that a person cannot deep link to another website if the target site objects. The original copyright owner objects.
That would have some big implications.
Right. That basically says stop using the web. The idea behind deep linking is instead of putting up a hyperlink to a site's homepage, you're doing it to one of the subpages or to a particular asset, an image or a,
an
article. This case, it's videos of supercross or motocross racing. And so this judge has said, no, this person's not allowed to do it, and trying to figure out fines. And it's really a shame because there's a technical answer to the question of deep linking. If you don't want people to deep link to you, you set up your web server to redirect you.
On GeekSpeak, we had trouble with this. We had this wonderful article by Sean a couple of years ago when he went to the Game Developers Conference. And we had a whole bunch of great images of his, and they get hit quite a bit.
Oh, this is the FireWire logo.
Oh, that's right. It's a FireWire logo. It's actually on your hard drive review. So in any case, the FireWire logo was used in some message board, a very popular message board, as their logo. So every time any of the message board pages got hit, we had to serve the image. So, Miles, you just went in there.
We were paying for their...
just basically turned it off, and by effectively saying, if the requesting page is not GeekSpeak, then don't...
Or one of our accepted partners, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty. It's a pretty easy technical solution. Why didn't the judge get offered that as an alternative? Because the lawyers aren't HTTP
well, in
experts.
Fairness, judges will have to rule on the merits of the case put in front of them, not necessarily on their own research. Because if judges went and did their own research and had their own things that they didn't put people...
Yeah, of course.
That they didn't get other people involved
in. The thing that's curious to me is that...
But this in contrast to California rulings, which have very much been... Let's look at the technology here.
Sure.
This is not a question of someone stealing content from you. This is a question of they're redirecting it to you for you to serve it.
It's interesting. I link to things all the time, but I almost never embed an image in my page that's actually served somewhere else. I find that kind of rude. In any case, thank you for that story.
Well, YouTube is made on that, though.
Well, YouTube, though... They're suggesting you do it, and they put their logo on it, and the actual file that you play, the Flash player that you play, has their name on it, and if you click out the end, it goes to their site. So they've designed the system to do that. That's totally different than me going and finding a nice image from a photographer's site and putting it on my website. It's just it's rude. Sean, I haven't gotten to you yet on news stories, but Drew, you've got something more applicable. So
well, I just found the answer to our question.
Oh, yes, here. Good.
So they had wireless telegraph was functioning.
Oh, I thought it was going to be the Santa Claus answer. Okay, anyways,
1906, wireless telegraph was functioning, and this engineer that John mentioned, Reginald Fessenden, was an ex-employee of Edison's, believed that it could carry the human voice, and the most common use at the time was talking to merchant ships at sea, talking about cargo and where they should go to port, etc. So there were these guys on the ship out at the ocean. He sent out his historic transmission. The sparks on the ships across the radio operators were called sparks at the time. They heard what they had dreamt about and thought impossible. A human voice coming from their instruments was someone speaking. Then a woman's voice rose in song. It was uncanny.
And before this, all transmission had been done via Morse code.
Yeah, dots and dashes.
People throw themselves off the side of the ship.
Soon the wireless rooms were crowded. There was a violin solo. Someone read a poem, and then a man made a speech.
That's great. Pretty cool. They used Morse code or the systems that were being used for Morse code. Speaking of Morse code, somebody?
Morse code, what about it?
Morse code is being...
Yes, it's being phased out with regard to ham radio certifications.
No way.
Yeah, it used to be a...
I can finally get my certification. No, I'm just kidding.
I learned all that for nothing.
Wait, you couldn't figure out Morse code? Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Wow. So they're phasing out Morse code, and yet we still have caps lock keys on our keyboard.
Darn good point. Sean, I haven't had any news stories from you, sir.
Oh.
You and I have like matching clothing. I've got a logo of your company. You've got a logo of your company. I'm really excited.
No, I have a Seagate shirt on.
Oh, Seagate's a good company, though.
That's the market.
Your hat actually had the NVIDIA.
Oh, my hat's
okay,
got I'm just full of brands right now.
Yeah, you're a brand. You're walking in a commercial.
So Siemens researchers have successfully tested a transmission rate of 107 gigabits per second.
Okay, on what?
Optical line over 100 miles.
107
gigabits.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So
With
100, how many Library of Congresses is that?
With 100% electrical processing done in the transmitter and receiver.
So they convert it to photons to send it
all hardware
back to electron.
Crazy.
Nice.
Yeah. So
well, it would have to be. It's about, that scale.
It increases per channel the maximum transmission performance by a factor of 2.5, which is would be it's pretty incredible. So
I wonder if the current fiber optic amplifiers that are used for transcontinental fiber optics, I wonder if those would still be able to bump that signal and continue it or not.
Yeah.
Because that would be the big infrastructure change in making our...
So currently, to get those high data transfer rates, the signal has to be split into multiple lower data rate signals and then reconverted. And this is all just done, you know, at
so
one time.
We're not going to see this in our house.
This would be a backbone thing.
I'm not going to transfer all my
still,
data
cool.
in a minute and a half.
You know, if we just get 10% of that, I'm into my house, you know. 1%? Yeah, okay.
Could live with that.
And move out of Brookdale. Thank you, Sean. John?
I was going to say, I'm surprised no one started doing multiple wavelengths, different colored light.
Well, I'm assuming that might be what's going on there, but it's a good point.
They don't actually specify what's going on.
All right.
Yeah, they don't. It's just a pretty vague announcement.
I got a pretty interesting story about Papa John's. The pizza company is looking to boost its web share. You could say their slice of the pie.
Domino's. You could, but you probably shouldn't.
Thank you, John. Someone in here. Domino's Pizza, Pizza Hut, and Papa John's are the top U.S. pizza delivery chains, and you can now go online to their website and configure and order your own pizza and then have them deliver it to you so you never even have to move out of your chair. At Papa John's, they've made some significant moves in the market because they're able to take an order from any single location and deliver it to you. So you can walk into any store, order a pizza up to 20 days in advance, and it'll show up piping hot, customized at your doorstep. This is a $200 million website, which to me, I thought this was kind of neat, it's kind of cool, it's kind of cute, and then I read that $200 million, and I thought, wow, that's significant.
It better do more than just that, right? No, so you can go to any storefront, you can also go to the website.
Of course, but they say that one of the significant competitive advantages for their company is that they've got 2,600 pizza parlors, and all those parlors are linked into the same site, so you can be standing there while your friend's ordering or whatever, and you can place your order for next month.
Hmm. So for event planning, what a cool thing to do.
Their online business at Pizza Hut has doubled in each of the last 3 years.
Wow.
Isn't that huge? But they're only doing a tiny amount of, they only have a tiny amount of restaurant locations where you can actually do it. And apparently that matters to people. Now, I'm not really clear why I would leave my chair to go down to the Pizza Hut restaurant and make an online order, but.
Yeah, it's good.
It works.
I want to cover one more thing. We've been talking about Vista. We'll do one more news story, and then we're going to go ahead and switch into our topic of cool technology and stuff for the year and bad technology for the year. But one thing that's been frustrating me is this whole thing that Vista's kind of been released for the OEM versions. In January, it's going to be fully released, and yet still it's confusing as to what you need to buy on a computer to actually get Vista fully working. So, Sean, do you have some updates on what's happening with Vista?
Yeah, according to an article on Daily Tech, Microsoft released the Vista system's requirements. I guess they really hadn't done that before. I thought they had, but according to this story, so a system must be running a CPU that at least 800 megahertz in speed. You need 512 megs of RAM. You need a DirectX 9 graphics card capable of running at least 800x600 resolution, a CD-ROM drive, and 20 gigabytes of hard disk space.
So this is the baseline minimum baseline minimum Vista.
Now, if you want Vista Premium ready to take advantage of the 3D graphics, you need a 1 gigahertz CPU, 1 gig of RAM.
Uh-huh.
Crazy. A DirectX 9 graphics card.
And does it specify video?
With RAM? 128 megs of onboard memory.
Mm-hmm.
Pixel Shader 2.0. Most DirectX 9 graphics cards have Pixel Shader 2.0 support. And you need a DVD-ROM drive. A sound card, internet access, and 40 gigs of hard drive space.
Internet access is required.
40 gigs of hard drive space?
Wow. So internet access is required for Vista.
That's for Windows Vista Premium ready.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead and post this up on the site. Most of the things we'll talk about today we'll collect and have up later on today at geekspeak.org. You are listening to Geekspeak. My name is Lyle Troxel. That was John Tracy. We also have Miles.
Sean Cleveland.
I'm sorry, that was Sean Tracy. That was John Tracy. Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Miles Elam, Drew Meyer. We also have some support geeks. Rick Philman, of course, is on the phone. Phone lines, we'll be accepting phone calls in just about 10 more minutes. Let's talk about technology that we like and hate from or that made an impact in 2006. I want to start with the one that I hate the most, and that is more effective spam. Miles, you want to cover image spam for us?
You mean what it is?
Yeah, what it is and how we can...
Well, image spam came about because a lot of what anti-spam technology uses is looks at the text of an email to figure out, does this sound like it's someone selling something, like selling Viagra or something like that?
They tried to create a lexicon of the common misspellings. They tried to estimate other misspellings. And basically, they started to do a really good job at blocking text.
Right. So what spammers have done is they will embed an image into the email, but they won't specify how big it is, so it doesn't look like a... So for a text or for a standard email filter scanner, it won't see it won't see how big it is, that it's taking up the entire screen. Within that image is text, but it's a graphic. It's a picture of text, not the text itself. So it's not easily readable. And they put in a whole bunch of lines and dots and squiggles to make it so that OCR becomes...
Optical character recognition.
Right. Becomes very difficult.
So they're still sending the same message, you know, buy the Viagra or whatever, but it's all in an image, and therefore the computer doesn't see it as text,
right,
and can't
then
analyze it.
We usually have a link to somewhere else, and that was a big deal, is that we could just look for links to see where they went to
right,
find out if they were spam. But now spammers are coming out with just an image that has all the text in there and then says, here's this great stock quote, enter in this URL here.
What's up with all these stock quote
in
things?
The,
like, I never look... I mean, I'll,
it's a pump
I've
and dump
investment.
Scheme. It's a classic.
So how does this stock
so
thing work?
If you send out a trillion messages and 100 people click on them or 1,000 people click on them and pump the stock price up by accessing it or buying it even, it's ridiculous that people do that, but the same thing.
You buy a penny stock.
Okay.
You buy as much as you can. Then you send out these pump and dump emails.
People raise the price.
Yeah, some other people... will give that stock activity, which will increase the stock price.
Activity as in purchasing it?
They purchase it, or they think, oh, this is a good heads up. I need to get in quick early. Well, the price starts to gradually rise. The guy who bought it at a penny turns around and sells it now for a buck. He just made 100% improvement on his investment. The rest of the people get stuck.
Well, a penny for a buck would be...
that's pretty dramatic, but that's
incredible.
Okay, that's basically what happens.
10 cents, and that'd be accurate.
Yeah, that's more like it.
And you think this is happening?
Absolutely. That's why people send the message.
If I go and look at the stock numbers and then go look at graphs on rates, I should be able to see bumps whenever the stock goes up.
Yes. But at the same time, by the time you get that spam, a lot of times it's already been done. Like, if you put your money in, you're going to lose it.
Right, of course. I'm not going to actually make the spam work.
Right. Nobody wins except for the spammer.
Right. The only way that you could possibly win is if you were the pump and dumper. In other words.
And how much money are these people making, do you think?
I don't know. Enough to send out spam.
Which wasn't very
enough to usually get anywhere between a 30% and 70%.
So the reason why this spam is so effective is there's technically no way to stop it at this point from the filtering perspective. How do you stop
this?
Well,
no, there are still going to be ways to battle it. Just because I can say from many of my email accounts, like, for example, through Gmail, they've been very effective at blocking image spam. I have received a couple through Gmail, and some people do, some people don't. But it's always going to be an arms race.
Mm-hmm. So there's...
people have talked about, well, why don't we just block all messages that have an image attached to them? Unfortunately, a lot of people use HTML email and they have their company logo at the bottom.
Yeah.
And that looks exactly like image spam.
Right.
There's no way to differentiate.
Okay. It's frustrating.
It's not
worst technology
solution,
2006. Right. Anybody's going to vote that the worst technology of 2006? Anybody?
Oh, I will.
If I were a spammer, I'd call it the best.
It makes my job hell some days. So yeah,
that would be my second.
Because actually, it makes it through. Gmail probably has some of the tightest filtering out there. I admire Gmail spam filtering. They're
this
really
is
good.
Free mail accounts offered by Google.
Right, and I work at a company that makes spam filtering software. So
right.
I don't say that lightly. There's continuously stuff that gets through spam filtering.
Yeah,
everybody's spam filtering out there, and it is now primarily these image-based spam. Every time a new spam campaign comes out, people will get it until the people who make the filters can adjust. We're fighting a defensive battle, so we're always
and we're
fine.
Losing.
Okay, well, Miles, you've intrigued my interest. If that's not your top bad technology of 2006, what is?
The rise of organized crime with regard to the internet.
Which
is online mafia.
Which is has a link to the spam.
Pump and dump, I don't know that necessarily is because that, I mean, they're using the botnets, but it's not the same level of violence.
Okay. If you're a spammer, you can go out and you can rent a botnet. to send out a campaign.
Right. Okay, so these botnets are crime. Controlled mostly Windows machines that have been controlled. We've talked about it before on the show. Why do you find this the most the worst technology use of technology in 2006, or at least on the internet? What is it?
Because it involves one, it's not the hacker in the basement. It's organized crime. They're putting a huge amount of resources into this because it's extremely profitable, and there's really no way for us to prosecute many of these places because where the countries that they're coming from don't have the law enforcement resources to stop it. In addition to that, they tend toward extortion. Like, online extortion is rampant. I mean, ridiculously rampant, to the point where there's a lot of companies that don't even admit to being extorted successfully because it would depress their stock value. But okay. It started off gambling sites, whatever, that didn't have protection. We're getting it. Now it's even the large mainstream companies.
This is a side effect of bad security.
Yes.
Okay.
And
so the way to solve this is for the security industry to step up to the plate and start making better products, educating people. What's the solution?
To get rid of all the old boxes. I mean, it really is sad. My own personal opinion is we need to get rid of all of the Windows 98, Windows 95
Windows
machines
XP?
That are out there. XP isn't doing so bad. Really, the previous ones are more of an issue because at least XP is still getting security updates.
All right.
Windows 95 and Windows 98 have been end-of-lifed, and they're never going to be improved, and they're just a big bullseye.
Okay. Most exciting technology of 2006, or the thing we saw growth most of 2006. Anybody?
Most exciting technology of 06?
Yeah, we just talked about two kind of depressing ones. Let's talk about the exciting ones.
There's this virtualization technology is pretty big in my world.
Virtualization?
Yeah, and Dee Dee had a news story about it. She threw in the pile, too, about the big... There's one dominant company. It's far outstripping Microsoft at the moment. They're called VMware. They're growing at 80% a year. They make virtualization software for servers. Now, bear with me here, guys. You take a system, an operating system like Windows or Linux or Macintosh now. They have a new version for it. And you bundle that up as a software image, and then you can take that and run it on a virtual machine anywhere. So you install this operating system by VMware, and on top of that operating system, you can run a virtual Windows PC, and beside that, you can run a virtual Macintosh machine, and beside that, you can run a virtual Unix box. Now, all three of those systems are running on the VMware OS, which is running on one or two clustered systems underneath that. The advantage is, if your Windows machine wipes out, it's virtual. So you simply reinstall it with a piece of software that includes all the applications, all the system settings, all the drivers, all the BIOS, everything. It's just done. You pick that up off of disk storage, drop it onto the virtual machine, and it's back up in minutes instead of hours with tapes. Mm. Cooler yet, you can take those systems, pick them up, move them around to systems that aren't using enough processing power.
But that's not new.
It's a very old concept.
What's new is hardware virtualization. The fact that Intel and AMD have built hardware virtualization into their latest processors.
How is this going to affect me as an end user of computers?
Not yet. Until it gets cheaper at a consumer level, you may run it at home, but really what will happen is all your applications will run on any platform. It doesn't matter what hardware you buy anymore.
Wow.
It doesn't matter if you're a Windows guy because you'll be running a Windows. If you're a Mac guy like you guys are in this room, you run a Windows virtual machine on your Macintosh, and you can be running Windows software on that Windows virtual machine.
I'm currently doing that with an application called Parallels.
Parallels is focused on the Macintosh, and VMware is much more focused and much broader market share for Windows and Unix.
All right.
And Sean's right. It's not a new technology. VMware has really gotten successful in the last year, and you're seeing the adoption in data centers all over the place.
Another exciting technology, Sean, you mentioned Seagate a minute ago because you're wearing a Seagate shirt. What's Seagate doing that's cool?
They make hard drives. Pretty cool.
They make big hard drives.
They're making like a 750 now, 750 gigabytes.
Terabytes right around the corner.
Yeah, so we've been reaching the super paramagnetic effect where the heads are getting so close to the right medium that the magnetic that's used to write and read can actually wipe the data out. It's really because the bits of data are so small now.
Mm-hmm.
So what they have done is Seagate came out with perpendicular recording technology.
I recall doing a show about it a while ago.
Yep. And it's longitudinal recording where the bits are actually stood straight up. Not really, but that's about the best way to describe it without going into extreme detail. And frankly, I don't think I understand the technology at that level.
Okay,
but it creates much higher density on the
Yeah, part. Up to 10 times the amount. So current hard disk technology... has an estimated 100 to 200 gigabit per square inch. What it can do is about 100 to 200 gigabits per square inch, how much it can fit into one. With perpendicular recording, they can do upwards of 1 terabit per square inch, which is 1,000 gigabits per square inch.
So we're going to see even larger drives from Seagate.
Because of this technology.
So five-fold increase?
Yeah.
Now, when you
Hitachi, Seagate, everybody.
Does that mean they're all taking the same technology of Seagate? They're doing some patenting stuff there?
I don't know exactly how it works or where the lines are drawn, but in order to be competitive. Hitachi is launching their own right now. Maxtor was acquired by Seagate, and so there's really three main players left anymore.
Ironically, if a company comes up with a technology like this and they don't share it in some way with their competitors, then they won't have any direct competitors in that market, and their stock price goes down.
It's creepy.
Isn't it?
All right. Geek Speak is supported by Business of Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. We're now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet. Just visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us.
KUSP co-sponsors First Night Monterey 2007, Rhythm and Hughes. Don't miss the New Year's Eve community celebration for all ages. The streets of historic downtown Monterey are transformed into a festive setting featuring music, food, singing, and dancing. The first act starts at 3 p.m. with the Twilight Parade at 5:30 p.m. Button passes are on sale at all Monterey County Longs, Rite Aid, and Safeway stores. For more information on First Night Monterey's New Year's Eve celebration, please call 373-4778 or go online to firstnightmonterey.org.
GeekSpeak is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering DSL broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruise.io has retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the Arum, Miles Elam, Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy. We also have Alex Lias and Dee Dee Hubbard via internet connectivity through chat. And Dee Dee will probably be calling in a little bit. We also have Rick Philman, who's sitting in the other room so that we don't hear all the chatter in the background, waiting to take your calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and send us email. Just click on Contact Us when you get there. Again, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. All right, do we have... Yes. We'll go ahead and go to Seaside. Hello, George? Seaside?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. What's your question today?
Well, it's a compound question, two parts, if I may. I don't know which ones
you can start, and we'll just turn you off if it gets boring. Go for it.
Okay. I'm running Windows XP Home Edition on a system I put together myself about a year ago without any major problems, had a major hard drive crash, put in a new 500 gig drive. Now, all of a sudden, I discovered that when Windows boots up, it tells me that the NTLDR is missing. The
NT loader.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so I thought, well, let me start from my Windows
CD.
XP bootable floppy. I inserted that, and somehow it allows me to boot into Windows, but only when I have the floppy inserted in the drive.
Okay.
That's one problem.
Let's see if we can address this one first.
Sure.
What's the NT loader, Drew?
NT loader is the piece of software that takes the system and starts it, goes from the BIOS to the actual booting off the disk.
Pretty important.
It's a critical key file for Windows, and it signals to me that you might have a trouble with your hard drive. But I have no idea.
And the floppy probably has a copy of that on there, right?
Yeah, if it's a boot floppy, that's exactly what's happening. It'll boot off the floppy
first. Is that a file that can be moved over?
Absolutely. You can replace it on your OS, but you have to get your OS to a point where you can address the hard drive. So it sounds like your BIOS is booting, going through the boot order, looking and either booting off of floppy or CD-ROM, which are both logical guesses.
It sounds like...
And then it can't turn to the hard drive.
Yeah, it sounds like some files got deleted
George,
at the root of your hard drive.
George, are you able to boot your normal system from the floppy?
Well, actually, it does not boot from the floppy. It accesses...
Accesses the floppy, and then it boots. Okay.
Sean, it, and then it boots normally.
Sean, what's the solution for George?
Go to geekspeak.org. Go to our November 25th show, which is Spam Creationism and 450 Gigabyte Paper. click on that, and you'll see at the very bottom, repairing Windows XP in 8 commands.
And that will do it.
Yeah, so follow that link and follow those instructions. You'll need your Windows XP boot CD.
Okay.
And what you do is you're gonna boot off the CD, go to a command prompt, and then follow these 8 easy steps. Okay. And it'll rebuild your Win XP and make it bootable again.
Okay, so again, that's the November 25th, did you say?
Yeah, November 25th show.
November 25th, 2006 of Geek Speak.
Sean.
Thank you so much for the call.
Well, that's part one.
Oh, that's right. Part two. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. In my infinite wisdom, thinking that what I needed to do was to repair Windows XP to take care of this NT loader problem.
Oh, the Windows utilities that
I
do repair.
I did the nightmarish repair sequence. Everything eventually worked, except that now my display will not allow me to display more than 4 bits, 16 colors.
Oh, okay. This means you don't have the correct drivers for your video card. Sean, would you agree?
I would agree.
So what you need to do is find out what video card you have, go to the website that made that video card, and get the current drivers for them and install them. Now, the thing is, you won't necessarily know what that video card is. Do you know what your video card is?
Well, I have an ATI All-in-Wonder Radeon. And,
perfect. So go to ATI. Mm-hmm. So go to ATI. .com and
ATI.AMD.com now.
Oh, that's right.
And download the latest Catalyst driver and install that. You should be fine.
George, thank you so much for the call.
They'll have a utility that you can run that'll tell you exactly what card you have if you want to know the version and stuff. But Sean's, I think the Catalyst drivers run across the whole platform, right?
Yeah, I believe they do. The unified driver.
Nice.
All right. Diane from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Diana. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I was making some funky Christmas mixes with iTunes and printing burning a bunch of them off.
Now, there's a question, Diane. What classifies as funky?
Oh, like Bootsy Collins and stuff like that?
Yeah,
oh,
Bootsy.
Man.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Getting down.
And I was not burning more than 7. I'd change my list or add some stuff because I was making them for presents.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, I kept getting this error message. Disk failed to burn, error code unknown 4000. And so, you know, they don't make it easy for you to figure out what that means. I don't know, I'm not a geek. So I finally found my way to a forum, an iTunes forum, where everybody else was really aggravated with this message. And somebody suggested that you slow down the burning speed. And so I slowed it down to 12x, and I was able to burn the CDs again. But
great.
That's the only solution, and I'm wondering if you know anything about this, what else I could try to be able to burn them faster.
Sean, do you have a guess on what is actually happening to the hardware at this point?
So it's an internal burner, and you're trying to burn directly from
your iTunes.
From
the hard drive.
How fast is
the
CD?
Is the file on the hard drive, or are you downloading it and streaming it to the burner? Because that could be an
issue.
If
it's iTunes, it's most likely just
it's from my music library. I bought some of the tunes.
Yeah.
So the song
iTunes does try to buffer it.
So. Oh, you know, the other thing, if it's a purchased file, that means it's got to uncode it on the fly, which can take some processing time to do that.
Oh.
So the trick with this is that your machine is not acting as fast as it needs to act to do this. So you don't want to have any other applications running, and rebooting your machine would probably help you quite a bit because
I did that many times.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then make sure you're not running anything else. If it's still having a problem, is it a laptop?
No.
How fast is the CD burner in there? Do you know? 32X, 48X, 12X? 8X? Probably says on the
front. More than 24X.
Okay.
I know what the problem is.
What?
CD burners, they may have a 32, 48X speed. That's for data. When you're writing audio, digital audio, most burners can't burn faster than like 16X.
Okay.
I mean, the really high-end drives, like the new Plextor, can do 24X, digital audio, because you're converting it to an audio CD.
A
digital file to an audio format.
The other thing to do is to buy better CD blanks. This comes from Alex.
Because I had just bought new CDs, too.
Yeah.
What kind are they?
CD quality is going to highly affect how fast it can burn.
Because they were burning before,
mm-hmm.
and then I bought these new CDs, and I think it burned one or two of them, and then it started pooping out.
Oh.
Yeah,
cheap? Are they no-name brand?
Well, I don't know. They got them from Costco.
The answer is yes, then.
You want to get a brand that you know of. Like
Max
LTDK. Thank you. Now, exactly.
I would say that if you can shop around to get really cheap ones and they're still burning fast and they seem to be okay, you're good. But this is exactly the kind of problems that you run into when you get the kind of lower cost ones.
I see.
Give that a shot and good luck.
Well, thank you so much.
Or just burn at 12 speed, you know?
Well, yeah, it doesn't take actually that long.
And, you know, if the CD doesn't last, you're going to make another Christmas CD next year for them, right?
So, right. We'll have to find what's new next year.
Diana, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, digital audio burners still can't burn those at full speed.
We're going to have Dee Dee join us from... hi, Dee Dee.
Hey.
Hi. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
We're going to go ahead and keep taking calls, too, because we have so many available. Yeah, Dee Dee, if you could speak up. I can't turn you up much more than that. So.
Oh, okay.
As you can, thank you. That's... Okay, we're going to go to Moss Landing. Tom, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
What I want to know is whether or not I can use a digital camcorder as a webcam. I'm running a... EMAC G4 with 1039.
iChat can do it with FireWire webcam.
So is it a FireWire?
It can do it with FireWire webcams, and it can.
Well, there's no webcam yet, and there's no webcam, and there is no digital camera yet.
Okay,
but if I can use the digital camera, that brings up $150.
Yes, if you buy, wait, do you have an eyesight?
Oh, no, I'm saying that...
Yeah, you can buy a digital video camera that has a FireWire attached, which all digital cameras have now, digital video cameras have, and you just plug that in, and iChat will recognize it, and you can use it as a webcam. Absolutely.
Okay, and will that demand greater bandwidth from my ISP for transmitting than, for instance, iSight would?
No. The application's going to handle the same kind of quality compression. Your machine can probably handle taking either of those signals.
Would
you agree to that, Dee Dee?
Yeah,
okay.
And do FireWire hubs work? Since I've got both my FireWire connections currently filled with a CD burner and a printer.
Yes, they do. And does I would assume that the printer is not FireWire. I would assume that it's a USB.
No, I have two printers, and an Epson is a FireWire printer.
Huh. Hubs do work. Wouldn't use the burner on the hub, but go direct with that one. But you could probably hub the printer and the video camera.
Okay. Well, thank you much. That brings up another extra $150 to spend on a good quality video cam.
I'll give you my address if you'd like to give me a present. That'd be fine, too.
Sure.
Thank you so much for the call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go ahead and do some more tech of 2006. We're talking about good and bad technology. I'm going to just leave this open to anybody. Dee Dee, if you'd like to chime in, any of the geeks in the air room with me?
I hate my cell phone service. Does that help?
That's good. That's bad technology. Why do you hate it?
Because it doesn't work, and it's not that complicated, I would think. I should say I am by no means a radio frequency expert here, but my experience in other nations abroad is far superior to what we experience in the United States.
You know, I think you have the same thing I have. When you know that technology can work in a certain way, and then the implementation of it is just horrible, it is excessively frustrating.
Yes, precisely. Excessively frustrating. Agonizing, in fact. My service drops calls. My service gives me messages hours after they were left.
What's your service?
Stinkular.
Singular?
Yes.
Wireless?
It is singular wireless.
You hate
and
it?
Not to mention that the telephone that I have is a Palm Trio, and the telephone itself reboots constantly. The operating system on the hardware is miserable, hangs frequently. I mean, this is a weekly occurrence where my phone will have to be rebooted manually.
GeekSpeak's, everything we say on GeekSpeak is not... our own views and all that.
This is one guy's experience, so take it with what it's worth.
Does any of you have a really good feeling about their current cell phone coverage?
Who else has Singular in here?
I have Singular. I like it.
I don't get dropped calls. Whenever I make a call.
Yeah, I have Singular.
Do you all have Trios?
No.
I have a Trio.
We're narrowing down.
Back in New York, I had a lot of friends who had Trios, and they had horrible experiences with them.
From the support end, supporting them on email servers, Singular is really bad.
Oh, really?
If you use BlackBerry has a certain published IP range that they use that you can allow through your spam server, mail server, whatever. Singular does not. Singular has like 6 Class B addresses, and they could use any IP from those Class B addresses.
I don't do much text messaging on my phone, but I do have Singular. The only text message I do is from Miles, which he has to pay me for because it costs me money. But I'm
already
really
paid in advance.
I'm really
this is the audience knows. I've already paid him in advance.
Actually, you're out of that dollar of coverage, man. I like my phone quite a bit, and I like the coverage I get. I've been pretty happy with Singular. So maybe it's the Trio.
Maybe it's the trio. Maybe it's just me. I have a personal radioactive field that interferes somehow. I don't know.
Maybe it's all the cake you eat. Okay, from Pebble Beach, Michael, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Oh, okay. Just heard a strange noise there. yeah, I have a question about December 13th in USA Today. While I was flying a midnight flight, I read a little article in there about a VoIP service that was allowed you to use a cell phone to connect with anybody in the U.S. or Canada for $39.95 a year. And I haven't been able to find that article any longer, and I walked off the plane and forgot it. So glad to be home.
Well, could someone help me out with VLI stands for?
I think Voice over IP.
I think you're saying VIOP.
Voice over IP.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, we can tell you a little bit about Voice over IP. Who wants to handle it?
Well, do you know anything about the service that...
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of voice over IP services, tons of them, and some of them will do free. I mean, you can do free voice over IP right now, continental U.S. and Canada. You have to have a computer, though.
A good place to get a lot of information and look at reviews of all this is voipreview.org.
Oh.
voipreview.org. They compare all the, you know, like Vonage and Skype.
Yeah, Comcast is now doing it.
So that's the solution, is just to go to that website, voipreview.org, and we'll have that up on geekspeak.org in a little while. And take a look at what people are saying about the different services. There's lots of service providers. You can get an actual phone. It's not actually normally a cell phone that you're using, though there's probably some higher-end featured phones that you can use your cell phone in a wireless network, and it's a little complicated, but it's definitely there. It's definitely real, and it's unlimited continental U.S.
You can transfer
Canada.
Your current phone number to it.
Yeah.
Well, there's always iPhone.
What's iPhone, Didi?
Cisco just released iPhone, which lets you speak on Skype via wireless and attach it to a whole bunch of other services.
Wait,
actually.
Really? Yeah. Really? Yeah. It's called iPhone?
It's called iPhone. They actually owned the name iPhone before Apple had even considered, you know, a rumor about having a phone.
So this iPhone hardware, it connects to your wireless in your home or at a store or whatever, and then uses free services like Skype to actually call anywhere in the U.S. So we're talking basically you buy the hardware and you've got a free phone outgoing.
Ah.
It's dual mode. I think it's a Linksys product, right?
Cisco Linksys.
And if it smells a wireless network in the air, then it'll connect wirelessly and you'd go voice over IP for free. If it's using a regular cell phone tower signal and you're in the right cell, then it'll use a regular cell phone signal.
That's exactly what Michael wants, right, Michael?
Yeah, I don't use the cell phone very often, but I thought it'd be handy to throw it in my car for when I'm on a road trip.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're not standing in the cafe where there's free wireless access, then you can't use the phone.
Well, so. I probably not, you know, if I'm going to need it while I'm on the road.
Then that's probably just going to be a normal cell phone most of the time. And
you can buy
the
these,
cost would apply.
You can buy the simpler handsets that are just voice over IP for your house and then use them on your home wireless network.
I see.
Thank you, Michael, for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, more bad tech or good tech? Let's try some good tech of 2006.
Let's talk about gaming systems, Didi.
I've got a little roundup for gaming stuff.
Go for it.
Well, you said you want to start off with the good first, right?
Yeah, the best.
Well, I'm a little biased. Everyone knows that.
You so, like the Wii, don't you?
I really like the Wii, but I'm
it's a television killer.
I'm just happy in general that there are new systems out there, you know, so, you know, we can get on to the next generation. So,
have you played with the PlayStation 3?
I played a little bit of PlayStation 3 at E3, but I haven't got a chance to do that in the wild. Because have you seen one?
No, I haven't actually even seen physically one.
Which
actually,
segues into the worst part of gaming tech in 2006 is the shortages of the Wii and the PS3.
The Wii has had shortages as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, every time a Wii's roll out onto a showroom floor, they will sell out just like that.
It seems like the companies aren't really doing their job of understanding their market and how much people will be buying these.
Oh, I don't know.
It
might
I don't
be production.
Know about that one.
Might,
I,
they
I
have
know
to
that
decide
Sony
how many they're
going to
build months in advance.
Problem.
Sorry, Didi, we lost that. Do you have one?
Have a Wii?
Yeah.
No, I don't have a Wii. Oh. I waited in line for 4 hours for a Wii, but...
There's a website dedicated to this. It's called WiiTracker.com, WiiTracker.com. You can go up there and you can see which different stores currently have them in. They're all sold out right now.
maybe a month ago, some of them had.
Actually, a friend called me yesterday from the Best Buy in Tracy, and he said they had PlayStation 3s for sale.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wait,
the stores are getting them.
Yeah, you'd have to go to Tracy, though. So
not anymore.
I'm so glad I don't have to drive to Tracy today. Oh, sorry,
what do you mean
Sean?
Not anymore? The stores aren't getting them. You just got to be at the right place at the right time.
Does your friend say that it's still in Tracy, or since he?
Oh, no, they sold out while he was there.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So actually, I guess it's kind of like if you see one of these things, you should buy it, right? Yeah, you can sell it again. Yeah. All right, so really cool technology. It's fun to see the next generation of gaming consoles. The problem with it, of course, is that it's been very difficult to get them. And I guess 2007 we'll be seeing a lot more of these systems, right, Dee Dee?
Well, right. So the Wii is trying for reaching for non-gamers and bringing back in people of all ages. So you're going to see a lot more games in 2007 that use the motion sensing technology of the Wiimote. And for the PS3... which didn't launch with a whole lot of games that were very different from the Xbox 360. We're hoping to find some more exclusives that will justify spending $500, $600 for a system.
And I got to say that Alex is chiming in with this discussion saying that the worst name for technology in 2006 is also the Wii. And I don't know if I totally support
it. I disagree with that.
Yeah?
Wii!
You think it's the best name? It's kind of grown on me. I don't think it's that great, though. But the technology behind it is, like Dee Dee said, it's bringing fun back into gaming, which is, I think, something that
was disappearing. Except people are throwing their Wii controllers into their TV sets.
The thing is, only a few of those.
No, my point is that at least Nintendo bothered to name their system. What's Sony? Well, PlayStation 3.
Hey, PlayStation's a name?
Yeah, PlayStation was. How long ago was that? And then we went, oh, PlayStation 2. 3.
Okay, I got...
Nintendo tried to do something.
I got a technology that I think
does
is...
Does Sega not count
cool.
anymore, you guys?
No, they're out.
Sega!
I got to say that the technology that I thought was pretty... that kind of hit me hard was this year actually installing Ubuntu and seeing how good of an OS it is for a completely free operating system. Now, this is someone that, you know, I'm very familiar with Windows and I'm very familiar with Macintosh OS, and seeing Ubuntu out of the box, load, install, easy to do, a simple distribution for Linux that I could actually recommend to somebody is really exciting.
And running off of a live CD so that you didn't have to have someone commit to the install.
You can try it out. That is very cool, too.
And then you can install it side by side with your current OS if you decide you like it and not give up anything.
Yeah, that was two of my top tens for this year.
Oh, it is. It is. Yeah, I saw it on the list, and it's definitely something that's kind of exciting to me. What I would love to see, honestly, is somebody taking, and this probably exists, but if one of you know about this, live CD of some Linux distribution that has a whole bunch of kids-safe content on it.
There's one. I've heard about it.
Yeah, I want to get one of those for my son.
Yeah, the Edubuntu.
Ubuntu has that?
Edubuntu
is a different flavor designed for students and kids.
Cool, I gotta try it out. All right, one more tech thing. I see a whole list here.
I have one.
Yeah, Sean.
Oh, I brought a perpendicular recording, though.
Yeah, but IE7, you mentioned, is something on our list, and you're using IE7, Internet Explorer 7.
Oh, I could care less about that.
Oh, really? Okay, never mind then. John, you got something.
I was just going to talk about YouTube.
Oh, YouTube. It kind of came into its own in 2006.
It was around before 2006, but I think it's kind of the beginning of the revolution. Not really.
No,
but
this year is when everyone heard about it, when everyone started using it. Yeah,
it's definitely this year. Yeah.
There's been a lot of great things that have happened because of it. You know, like you take a video of police abuse, you put it up on YouTube, it's out there for everybody. You know, that kind of stuff. It's kind of given people a way to speak.
And all the things we're mentioning, we're going to have to put on the Geek Speak site. Does anybody want to volunteer for this? I'm so packed today. Miles, I'm looking at Miles strongly. Look, oh, he's averting his eyes. Yeah, Miles might do it if I rub him a little bit.
knuckle three, the wrist. Not it.
But the other thing that, so YouTube is you, as in
Y-O-U.
Y-O-U.
As in Times Man of the Year.
TubeTube.com. If you've got some bandwidth to spare, you're going to burn a whole bunch of time going there because it's a lot of content up that's really fun.
65 nanometer shrink.
Okay. Processor technology. Really good processor technology.
Now that we're able to shrink transistors down so small, we're actually able to put more cores in the same real estate.
So 65 nanometer?
Yeah.
65 nanometer has caused all these multi-core computers?
The HIV virus is around 120 nanometers in size. A human red blood cell is 6,000 to 8,000 nanometers. A human hair is 80,000 nanometers. And we're able to produce a transistor that is 65 nanometers.
Smaller than the virus?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that small.
You could take 2,000 transistors at 65 nanometer and fit them in the same space that a transistor from the 8086 took up.
How many?
2,000.
Whoa.
So now you're able to put more memory on a chip, more cores.
And that's why we're seeing all these fast computers.
It takes up less space on a wafer. So they can produce more of them. The process technology allows for more workable chips to come off a platter, which is your yield. I mean, there's a lot going on here. And now, finally, software makers are forced to write software that can multitask. And hopefully, next year, game makers will follow and make games that can multitask.
Okay. How about one of the best technology uses in 2006 for social change in the world?
Ubuntu.
I would say blogs in the Middle East. We're not able to get much news out of Iraq other than folks that are in the green zone, for example. And so a lot of that news is coming from bloggers, some people who can actually get access to the internet in Iraq. And also in Iran, a huge movement where a lot of information coming through is coming from bloggers. Bloggers who, in fact, may be risking their lives by doing so because that regime will crack down on information so hard.
Right. So basically the use of website, easy tools to publish websites and the whole RSS feed so that people can read them really well, the blogging infrastructure spreading throughout people all over the world.
Right, and getting information out of, or disseminating information in areas where normal modes of communication break down or are not allowed.
All right, one more technology I think that's coming out. One other thing that I think was really exciting for us in 2006, at least came into its own, is Wikipedia. I would say 2006 is the year that it kind of hit. Do you guys all agree?
Yeah.
At least it's been used excessively. Wikipedia, the free, everybody edits encyclopedia, has tons of content, a lot of fun to get to, and seems to be relatively valid in its information, which is kind of exciting.
Because it's reviewed by so many peers.
Yeah. So Wikipedia. So one
guys,
more.
I have a confession. In 2006, I was showing my wife how to use Wikipedia, and I went in and I changed the date in an article, and then I forgot which date I changed, and I left it.
Oh, no.
So I've permanently corrupted Wikipedia.
Or someone fixed it already.
It's possible. It's very possible. But if it goes down, it's my fault.
You malcontent.
And then she laughed at me, which was the worst part. She's like, this isn't useful for anything. Anyone can change it. Look at, you just broke it.
GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The Geeks this morning, Miles Elam, Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy's over there behind the audio stack, Dee Dee Hubbard, and Alex Leah supported us through AIM. Of course, all of you for calling in, for listening to GeekSpeak, and for those that called in and making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, and who really wants to listen to that? A special thanks goes out to Rick Philman for answering our phones every week and being such a great guy, keeping us on track and correcting us when we've gone astray. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. My name's Lyle Troxell. We're going to be back next week as we are every week. Next week, of course, being the last show of the year, we're going to talk about what's coming up in 2007. So this show was kind of what we thought was really cool. And next time, we're going to do a little prediction, a little bit more discussions about the technology we think we're going to really be booming in 2007. We got a couple more seconds. Anybody want to say a happy new year?
Try Ubuntu.
Okay, that's a good one.
www.ubuntu.com. UBUNTU.com.
Another plug for
John's got a great.
Donate to Wikipedia.org. They're looking for money to keep going right now. I think it's worth it.
Wikipedia.org.
Yeah. Throw in 50
You know,
bucks.
I don't see a donate anything at Wikipedia.org.
Go to en.wikipedia.org. Click on the English side.
Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBH Santa Ana. We're on the web at kosp.org. Coming up next is Castle Cottage, but first we're going to have the Slow County Report. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. We will see you next week.